So I try to first to introduce myself for those who do not know me, and probably many of you do not know me. I have been working in Orsay for years, doing essentially NMR experiments on various systems, Kondo effect, spin glasses, things like that in the past. But in the last 15 years, we have been very much involved in the cuprates. On the cuprates, we did many kind of measurements, both in the antiferromagnetic, phases, in the metallic and superconducting phases. I can say that we discovered in my group the pseudo gap in 1989, and it's a long time ago now. We have done recently a series of experiments on impurities, using impurities as probes of the normal state properties of the cuprates. This is something I have been speaking about in many conferences in the last 2 years. So some of you do know that, some maybe do not know. So depending on the situation, I could retrace these kind of things in the next days for anybody who would be interested. We are doing some experiments on the role of intrinsic disorder. In fact, at present, we are very much interested in any kind of disorder in this material. So we are both working on intrinsic disorder, but also we are doing some material research on an anomalous phase of hydrated phase of IPCO, which is antiferromagnetic. We are doing a lot of experiments, essentially transport measurements, using controlled disorder, in which the disorder is created in the copper oxygen planes by electron irradiation. And this is extremely interesting because we can easily reach TC equals zero. Well, easily, we can reach TC equals zero by electron irradiation in a very controlled manner. So we are studying how the electronic transport and superconductivity is affected. This is done with Florence Rullier-Albeck in CEA Saclay. All this work on impurities as probe of normal state properties let us try to work on other spin systems like spin chains. We are beginning, pursuing work on impurities in yttrium boron nickel oxide, which is a Haldane gap system. In all these experiments, the essential things that we are seeing is that when you put a non-magnetic impurities in any of these correlated electron systems, you induce magnetism. And you induce magnetism around locally around the impurity. And it's this kind of thing that we can trace out with NMR experiments. And for instance, in cuprates, we see that you can have a local moment. And depending of the doping, you develop Kondo magnetism of this local moment, which depends when you reach high doping levels, the Kondo temperature becomes very large. We could even follow all this magnetism into the superconducting state. There is another kind of activity which I am not really able to describe you in detail, which is really the work of Philippe Mandels with the colleagues. The names here have to be cited. Julien Bobroff, Florence Rullier-Albeck, and Philippe Mandels are permanent people, either in Saclay or in Orsay. You have some students here, and we have a new permanent in the group. So all these people are really the people who do the work. I am the boss, I would say. Okay, so this is not the thing I'm going to speak about today, because I have been speaking of this kind of work for years. And I think there is an interesting work which I have not been publicizing a lot, but which corresponds to many publications, and which I think is might be of interest for this community. So I thought that it was more interesting here to speak of this and to try to let you know in some detail. This is the properties of the fullerite. Everybody knows some of that, but I am convinced that very few people know the details of this very interesting series of systems. The fullerites can be, you can do polymers of those quite naturally. You can have cubic phases which can be superconducting, and all these systems show up strong correlation effect together with the Yandela distortions, as I'll try to explain you. So all this work is work done by Véronique Brouet, who is also permanent in our group and has been working on that for 8 years with me. She is presently visiting as a postdoc for 2 years in Zach Shen's group in Stanford and Berkeley, in fact, in the Berkeley side of Shen's group. And all this is done in collaboration with a group of Laszlo Foro in Lausanne, who does both the materials and the ESR experiments on these systems. And there is a lot of publications running, which you might find out if interested. So I am going to be extremely pedestrian and try just to recall this kind of physics, because I am afraid many people might not know at all the details and could. I don't want to lose people in 5 minutes. I prefer that people follow us as long as they can, at least. So the interest of the carbon is an interesting material. It shows this diamond structure that everybody knows, the graphite, which is a material which has some interest in itself, because it's a layered material which has strange properties at low temperature, which are not well controlled nowadays, mainly because one cannot do very, very good samples. And you certainly know about the discovery of these two classes of materials which were done. And which was synthesized in big quantities. And this is the interest, is that once these materials, the 60 and the nanotubes, could be synthesized in big quantities, one could begin to do solid state experiments on this material. The fullerides, well, it's strange that the screen is not totally inside. What happens? I'm losing part of it. Okay, but maybe this is not important. So the solid C60 is an interesting material because it's a molecular solid in which the balls interact by van der Waals interactions. The distances between the carbons are really van der Waals distances. So the overlaps between the balls are very small in this system. And the fact that the balls are large enough in size makes that the interstices between the balls are large enough that you can house many type of materials in between. And the most famous cases is the case in which you house just an alkali and you have a tetrahedral site, an octahedral site, and a tetrahedral site. And this, when you put free alkali per C60, this has led to the discovery of reasonably high TC superconductors with TC around 30 K and above, well, up to 40 K depending on pressure, etc. So this has interested the community for a while. Also, one did find other type of materials which are polymers, which you obtain in the solid state without doing anything. I mean, naturally the system polymerizes and you build up cycloaddition cycles between the balls, which give you a chain-like structure. And this polymer has also interesting properties. But this is not going to be the main point. So the idea is that you can, in principle, easily, you are supposed to be able to produce easily this kind of materials in which you can switch the... So it's crazy that it cuts. You can go from A A1 is 60. Okay. A1 is 60. You can do A1 is 68.
Shall we try?
To change the resolution?
Oh, man.
It's the wrong way, yeah.
Where's the guy who usually...
The size is smaller, larger.
What's the guy get
with? Press reset. It's a screen resolution problem.
I think it's a lack of compatibility between...
No, just change the screen resolution.
On the computer?
The guy.
Now it's resetting.
Yeah. Doesn't do it anymore.
Now you've done it.
Okay.
No. You can do what you want, except erase the file. Oh, let me copy it before.
So you want to? I was going to change the resolution.
Yeah, do. It's too small or too large?
I don't know.
It's the first time I use it here. I think you could do it without seeing everything. It's in French.
The right.
No.
Just to see where it is when we do the show.
This is the one. And I need to go to the diaporama. No, it's cutting still.
That's better.
Ah, it seems to be no. You don't have the bottom of the screen. You are still missing just the bottom of the screen. Ah. Okay, leave it. You could leave it.
Worth trying.
Yeah, here it's okay. I think it will be okay now. Because everything is in it. Okay. I have the impression is...
Okay, great.
I think it's okay now.
No,
it's not right.
It's not the right talk. That's not the projector's fault.
Because he closed it. Okay.
think it was I think it might be three presentations.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. I think this is going the right. Okay. We go. Okay. Here we are. So now we have everything. So this system, as I said, you can the polymer. I have to go to the next. So the idea is that. You can, in principle, by inserting at different places, you could either get something which has only one alkali per cell, or two alkali per cell, or three alkali per cell. But this is theoretical. In practice, it doesn't work that easily. And you would even expect easily to be able to have vacancies and then to get a continuous modification of the doping of the C60. And this is something which is not that easy to do, in fact, in reality. So this is what we are going to speak about, which makes that these compounds are, some of these are really synthesized, and one can work on that. And this makes some complications, which has led to take some time to arrive to conclusions about the physics. So this is the outline of the talk. I'll try first to do an introduction. I hope the introduction will be accessible to everybody. In which I try to show which are the experimental reasons which lead to think that some peculiarities of these systems are very important, specifically the existence of correlations. We shall show that this has led us to study some specific compounds. One way we were able to make them, which was not that easy, in particular the A1C60 cubic compound, in which we'll show that it is in between a metal or a mod insulator in some sense. You'll see that you have a real situation there. The same kind of problem arises in Na2C60. We'll show that this synthesis of Na2C60 will help us to get some very interesting information. And we'll see also why different A3C60 compounds have different properties. So to start, I am just presenting the LDA electronic structure calculations of the pure C60 for the beginning. This is the molecular levels of the C60, which are given just for simple molecule, and the levels are full up to this level, the HU, I think. And T1U is the first level which is empty in the C60 case. And when you calculate the electronic structure by LDA in C60, you find that the broadening of the bands is not huge. The levels are exactly the same. They are shifted in energy but broadened, and only slightly broadened without overlaps. So here you have a situation which is very simple, because this is a simple molecular solid in which the characteristics of the electron state seems to be exactly the same as those of the molecule, which comes from the fact that the interaction between molecules is small, being van der Waals. Now, if you try to put an alkali, you find immediately that the S electronic level of the alkali is much higher than the last band occupied in C60, which makes that you just transfer the electrons from the alkali to the first available band. And so if you just do LDA calculation and do it for all these structures, which were the ones which were available in the past, but you could do that for any structure, what you will find is that you are just filling a tight binding band in some sense. And so you are expecting to find that everything is metallic, except C60 and K6C60, because this level has is free, triply degenerate, so you have six electrons to put there. So in principle, all these should be metals within LDA. And this is
The
bottom is just a Gaussian broadening of the bands to show you that, apart from the fine structures of the bands, the width are nearly the same, and the overlaps are not. You could just mimic the band structure by this, but of course this is very simplified, as you will see after. So if, and at the beginning, this was thought to be extremely good, because the most studied compounds were A3C60.
And
that's supposed to be half filled, but this is a degenerate band with six electrons, so it should be a nice metal. It is indeed. They are superconductor, no problem. And the TC was found to scale quite nicely with the lattice constants when you consider the series, because the alkali are slightly larger than each other, and make that you are just pushing apart the C60, just changing the density of states by changing the bandwidth. So you could say quite nicely that TC follows a simple behavior with the distance or the density of states, and that should tell you that everything which is due to phonon is rather local and associated with the balls and not with the intermolecular phonons, and that TC depends on the density of state as expected by BCS, and this was really taken as a good proof that BCS explains nicely the superconductivity of these materials. So this was the picture in the early 92, 93, something like that, when these were discovered. But when you look in more detail to the molecule, you find that the width that you calculate by LDA is 0.5 EV with threefold degeneracy. But first, you have problems because the electron phonon interaction is going to be high, and with high energy phonon frequency. The phonons which enter are the phonons of the ball, which corresponds to vibrations of the ball, and their energies are very high. So this could, of course, explain the high TC as well, but this also yields to the idea that the Migdal's theorem should break down, and that you have to take into account adiabatic effects. This has been said for a while. The second point is that...
Has anybody observed the isotope effect?
I think it has been measured. C13 and C40. I think it has been done, but to verify that, I am not sure this is so clear. I don't know the details of that. But it's true. One should check the electron-electron interaction. You can calculate use for the molecule, and they are about the one EV, which makes that they are sizable, if you compare to the which is 0.5 EV. So why should electron correlations be completely negligible? Why should we have a very simple case? So this is one of the questions which was raised. The other point is that this C60 has a peculiar structure. The symmetry is so high that you have some unusual parameters. First, the high frequency phonons, as I said before. The electron-phonon coupling is supposed to be much larger than in graphite, for instance. I think the argument are that the curvature of the C60 molecule yields larger electron-phonon coupling. I am not sure of the real why the curvature is really linked to the electron-phonon coupling, but that's what is usually told. The other thing is the high symmetry, which says that you could think that both phonon and electronic modes are very sensitive to perturbation. And for instance, you expect that you could, depending on the charge of the ball, you could have Yantella distortion of the balls, which means that you could have a distortion which is stabilized depending of the electronic charge. And this kind of distortion had been advocating as being important for the physics, but the point is that X-rays, well, at least all structural techniques, did not evidence this kind of thing, except in very few cases, which are really not interesting on their electronic properties. So the real question is, can we just with these peculiarities explain the high TC of these systems in the BCS type of framework? One point which has been disturbing is that there seems some to be some strange effect associated with a structure. I'll show you why. The reason is even pure C60 is has a symmetry which is not compatible. The FCC structure is not compatible with the icosahedral structure of the ball, which makes that you cannot do an ordered FCC C60. The reason why we keep it as FCC is that at high temperature the balls are rotating, and so what you have is completely a situation where you can give a spherical symmetry to the balls, and then you can say that at high T the plastic solid which exists in that case is really FCC.
How but high is the temperature here?
It's 250, the transition temperature. So above 250 K, you reach a state where the balls rotate. But below,
in
space, of course. This is the structure in space. But the balls are rotating. And the point is that when you cool, you freeze, but you freeze you don't freeze the system immediately. You slow down rotations, or you allow rotations in some directions. And in fact, the C60 at 250 K doesn't freeze. In fact, change structure. It becomes simple cubic because there is a correlation between the motion of these four molecules, the A, B, C, D, which rotate around axes which are correlated to each other, and which give you a real cubic structure with these four balls as a unit cell. But still, this is still a plastic system because the balls are still rotating. They are not frozen. When you go to very low temperature, then they freeze completely. And when they freeze completely, then there is always some disorder in the orientations.
So is the glassy character associated with the freezing of these?
There should be. There should be a glassy character associated to that. And that's one of the questions. And this has led to an interesting case, which is that Na2AC60 and A3C60 were found to be different. You remember what I told you for the A3C60. This is a special A3C60 which has two sodium. And sodium seems to be a little bit particular. It goes into the tetrahedral sites, and the other alkali A goes in the octahedral site. And what was found experimentally is this line. So this gives a situation which is a little bit strange, because I think I have an old diaporama which is telling, which is that the line for the cubic phase is different from the line for the FCC phase. So that gives a little bit of problem, because this idea that this was a TC versus A relation which should be universal seems to disappear once you have found these kind of systems. So why do we have this different slope? Do we have a different variation of the density of state for these two phases? Does the alkali play a role in the electronic properties? Is that an artifact? Because there are material problems also, which could eventually, there are polymerized phases. So many questions were opened about this line. And also something strange was that when you put pressure on these materials, you find that they follow a line parallel to this one. So there are really some questions which seems to not so to be so easy to understand. There is a relation between structure and properties which is not negligible at all when one considers TC.
When you apply pressure, it likes the FCC backing better than the cubic. Is that why?
I don't think there is a change of structure with the pressure. It's not so clear. One of the ideas was that these systems do not have this phase transition, and so at low temperature they only give disorder. This one has a better ordered phase in some sense, which means that eventually in an ordered phase you could have a different density of state than in disordered phase, and then you could have different. But I'm not convinced of the real interpretation of that stuff. The other thing which is very interesting is the variation of TC with doping. As I told you, it's not easy to change continuously TC. But what happens is in some cases one could get some some change in the carrier concentration by playing around with chemical substituents. And what happens is that the TC seems to be very much dependent of the carrier concentration, and TC goes to zero very fast when you change the carrier concentration. In fact, you have a any compound with four seems to be insulator, and that will come back on it immediately. The A4, C60 seem to be insulators. And here, as soon as you go down below 2.5, you seem to lose superconductivity. So there is a real point here which seems to indicate that there is something strange with the 3. 3 seems to be a good case for superconductivity, and as soon as you get off, you lose superconductivity. I forget, because really, nowadays it's not, nobody should speak of that anymore. But they find the same thing that with bulk materials, so he was clever enough to know the situation. Okay, let's go to the metal insulator transition. The idea which was immediately pursued was to try to push apart the C60s, to try to increase the lattice spacing as much as possible. That increases TC, of course. And if you increase too much, you would expect some time to reach an insulator. So you expect to have a mod type of insulator, metal insulator transition. And indeed, this was found in systems in which you put ammonium, which gives a larger spacer than the alkali. So you have still free alkalis, but you introduce ammonium in extra, which pushes apart the C60, but see, what happens then is that you find that most of these compounds are insulators and anti-ferromagnetic insulators. The same thing here with these compounds. You find while the real FCC are superconducting, you find this is the same, I think. So there is a situation, these are the antiferromagnetic temperatures, not the superconducting temperatures. So the system becomes antiferromagnetic if you try to push the lattice spacing. And the problem is that at the same time, you have a structural distortion which occurs. That is, these systems do not remain FCC, but they become antiferromagnetic. Well,
the difference in the different materials is a different amount of
No. It's these are the the difference is the alkalis. It's K2 sodium rubidium 2, sodium 2 cesium. That's what you change. The alkalis are making the difference. But you see, all of them are nearly antiferromagnets. So the fact that they become antiferromagnet is telling you that you are not far from a metal insulator transition somewhere. But we don't know what drives this metal insulator transition, whether it's the distance or the structure. So there is still a problem linked with this kind of situation.
But the different distances are obtained by pressure or what?
These are the FCC phases just with the A3 C60 without anything in between. Just free alkalis C60 except the sodium. So it's, let's say it's lithium, sodium, no, lithium, rubidium, no, not lithium, rubidium, cesium, or potassium. And playing on the alkali, you just change the distance because they are large, depends on the size of the alkali. But the small alkalis are giving problems. Sodium and lithium doesn't enter that well. So sodium is smaller than the other one and gives some problems.
But when you have a series of triangles or a series of squares, what is differentiating difference?
These are different amounts of ammonia and alkalis all together. Some are rubidium 2 and potassium 2. I think each of these materials need a full study by itself, I would say. That's one of the problems. But I am just showing you that you have all the ingredients to tell you that you have a correlated electron system because you switch easily to insulators which are antiferromagnets with reasonable high Néel temperatures. So the problem with the strong electronic correlations is that we know, as I told you, that U is about 1 to 1.5 dV. And it's still larger than W, so it could be Mott Hilbert insulator. But some arguments have been given that you have an orbital degeneracy, and that when you have a large orbital degeneracy, which is the case here because you have free-fall degeneracy, you increase the ratio for the metal insulator transition. So this can be one of the arguments which plays a role. But still, everything tells you that you are not that far from metal insulator transition. And the question, A3C60 is a metal, A4C60 is an insulator, while in LDA, both should be metals. Are the correlations playing any role in yielding this situation? And that's the kind of thing we are going to try to address. So the main point is what I have told you here is telling you that with these stoichiometries 3 and 4, which are the easy ones, you don't have all the information on this system. So you really need to study other stoichiometries, and this is exactly what has been our program for years. So we try to work on the A1 compound, because of course this is the most interesting for the Mott transition case. A1 means one electron per ball, and it would be very interesting to be able to work on that. Unfortunately, as you will see, this is not that easy and took us some time. The reason is that these alkali C60 phases with only one alkali have strange properties. First, in the high temperature range, when they are really cubic, you have, and that was found from the beginning, you find that this is an NMR measurements, but they are measuring just the shift of the cesium NMR, which gives you the susceptibility in the system. And what was found is that the shift has a nice 1/T low in high temperature range, which means that the system seems to be a dense paramagnet. So if you put one electron per C60 ball, you seem to get a dense paramagnet. If you try to calculate the ordering temperature, it's below a few K. The problem is you cannot follow this phase down to low temperature because the system doesn't like to stay like that. So when you cool it, it polymerizes and it gives you this nice polymer that I have been speaking about before. And it took us a lot of time to realize that you could quench this phase to low temperature and keep it at low temperature. This is what I call the cubic quenched cesium C60. And this, if you take rubidium or sodium, you cannot even quench it. Any quench is too slow and the system polymerizes or give you other phases. There are many possibilities. You can get a dimer phase. That is the cesium dimerizes. So if you quench it, if you quench it too high in temperature, it dimerizes. If you quench it low in temperature, you keep the cubic phase. And once we found that, then we could begin to work seriously on this system. So this is the cubic phase, which is the high temperature phase. And when you cool it slowly, that's what you get. And this polymer by itself, we worked on it 3 years. And it's very interesting because it has apparently 1D properties, but you don't understand whether the 1D properties are in this direction or this one, in fact. This is still an open question. And depending of whether the polymer is with cesium, potassium, and rubidium, you have different ordering of the chains and which give different properties. It's very, very funny, but maybe less general than the things I am going to speak about. So the high T, the cesium C60 is such that from the high T cubic phase, if you quench at 200K, you get the dimer phase, in which the balls dimerize, but they are just stuck by one bridge, by one carbon-carbon link. If you quench it to lower temperature, then you quench the cubic phase to low temperature. And the structural studies show that this is really the cubic phase in which you have frozen the rotations of the balls, but which is still the same as the one you had at high temperature and without strange properties. Well, the polymer phase, by the way, could be identified, because when we do NMR, we can an amount of carbon 13 in this kind of phase, carbon 13 has one line, a single line. You reach here, you find the spectra, which are very complicated, because the electronic structure, because of these four carbons, which distinguish the sites, all these sites get different electronic densities. And as a result, you have a very complicated spectrum in which you can identify all the carbons in the system, and the system differ whether it's potassium or iridium or cesium. But that's not. So now let's go to cesium-C60, the quick cubic quenched phase of cesium-C60. The thing which puzzled us is that we have a cubic phase with one cesium site. You look at cesium NMR, you find three resonances. And that's very puzzling, which at the beginning, of course, tells you the material is wrong. You have three phases. One is the one you are studying. The two other ones are not known. We worked. No problem. This is the real signal of this phase, without doubt. No problem. It's not extrinsic phases. It's really the intrinsic signals of this phase. At low temperature, of course, because this phase, it's not stable above 130K. After 130K, switches back to the polymer. And the polymer has different spectra than this. So this really puzzled us for a while. And after doing many And the properties of these lines are also very different. That is, when you cool in temperature, this line moves very much. This one is the same, follows this one with a factor of two shift. The third one, this one doesn't move much. So, and this one is strongly shifted, has a large, correspond to a large susceptibility, this one to a weaker susceptibility. So apparently we have sites with different electronic environments. There is no structural effect detected by X-rays which could tell you anything about that. There is only a single site. So we had to fight a little bit to try to understand that.
So and what happens if you, instead of measuring a night shift, you just measure the susceptibility directly?
Oh, it's too complicated to do measure susceptibility, because the quenching, you have to keep the sample, be able to do the susceptibility measurement. You always have, in all these materials, you have Curie terms due to extrinsic phases. So NMR is really the tool to do that. There is no way on susceptibility. You would find the same.
Which one?
This. Ah, you would find the superposition, as usual.
Still there's some unknown matrix elements. That's the problem with NMR.
You don't know the hyperfine couplings. They don't change that much, usually. But it's true that you have a problem to give the numbers. But the interesting thing is that you can measure T1. So you know what you are measuring is connected. The 1 over T1T is connected to the shift. There are connections that you can follow. Huh? And so I go fast, sorry, because I want to speak of so many different things. But if you want to discuss more in details, we can. So this kind of behavior tells you that you have a gap somewhere. And you are just finding a gap that you are measuring. And basically, the low T behavior tells you that you don't have a magnetic ground state. You reach a constant value both for T1T at low temperature and for the shift. So this led us to propose a simple explanation for that, is to to say that the electrons, rather than being one per ball, sometimes prefer to be two per ball. And let's assume you form a such kind of situation. You form a singlets. If you form singlets, these singlets will have neighbors which will sense different electronic susceptibilities. And the thing which happens if for a singlet, if you increase temperature, you begin to populate the triplet. And then you can have singlet-triplet excitation, which gives you a gap. And so the idea was to attribute the S line to cesium neighbors of one localized C62 minus. So this one. You see these neighbors of one ball. And then the others, of course, correspond to sites which are not neighbors of singlets. That's why they have shift which doesn't depend on temperature whatsoever. And the third line is easy then to understand. It means that if you have cesium, which is neighbor of two of these singlets, it will give you a double shift, which is exactly what is fine. So double the relation for shifts and T1 scale exactly as you expect for a site which probes two identical singlets. So this is the thing we proposed, and we tried to study it in more detail by doing just intensity analysis of the number of trapped sites. So what we did is just to calculate the percentage of C60, which are the percentage of cesium sites which fill the C62 minus versus the concentration of those, and we did a random model in which you suppose that two singlets can be near neighbors, and here a situation in which we exclude nearest neighbors, and this allows us to calculate. Well, we measured the relative intensities by NMR, found that these do not change with the temperature, which tells us then that we have a fixed number of, roughly fixed number of trapped C62 minus. And we found immediately that in a random model, you have sites which have no singlet neighbor. The red is one singlet neighbor, the green is two singlet neighbor, the blue is three singlet neighbor. These are just the statistical numbers versus concentration of C62 minus, and these are the data. The data are here. So this one corresponds to the near neighbor of a singlet. You see the colors correspond. And the 2S means you have two singlet neighbors. And we don't see any line which corresponds to three neighboring singlets. So in this model, this is excluded by construction. This is why we excluded it. And you see that we can really nicely feed the data here. That is, for 12% of singlets, we can explain the intensity of the three lines perfectly, and the absence of the fourth, while here it's impossible. So this tells us that these singlets do not like to be near neighbors, and this can be understood because there is a strong Coulomb repulsion between the singlets. So the other thing we could do is to study the T1 of the different lines, at least the NS and the S line, and we find that the T1s have some temperature depends on the density, but the point is that when you reach high temperature, you see that they merge to each other. That is, the line S and NS at 130 has nearly the same T1, exactly even the same T1. And this situation can be understood if you think that the singlets can jump in space. That is, if they can jump from one site to the next, then you begin to intermix the cesium sites. You do chemical exchange, if you want, in terms of chemistry. So you have a chemical exchange between the cesium sites. So the T1s become identical. On the long time, they don't distinguish each other. But on the short time, the frequencies do distinguish the different environments. So the lines are still well separated without problem. Completely separated, but the T1s merge at high temperature. And if you do, you can put numbers and try to understand which is the probability to jump, and you find very short jumping rates. I think they are here. The jump rate is given by an activation law. So it's very interesting to find that this kind of electronic separation does occur. I mean, it's a disproportionation, I would say. It seems to occur in this system. And why do that occur? In fact, the argument is that if you take just the single molecule and you calculate the energies with one electron, that is the ions with C60 minus, C62 minus, C63 minus, if you calculate the energy levels, you find that you can distort the balls by Jan-Teller effect, depending on the charge that you put on it, and that you gain more energy you get more energy by putting two electrons, by the Yantera distortion that you get when you put two electrons rather than when you put one, three or four, etc. So this seems to be a good indication just on the molecular level that this two minus state is more stable than a one minus state. So this kind of situation seems to be favored upon this one. However, there is a problem because the Yantera energy is 0.1. Well, the gain that you could expect from this kind of processes is 0.1 eV. Also, this splitting can be as large as 0.5 eV. The gain that you get on a molecular picture is only 0.1, while you have to pay the Coulomb energy, which is U, which is 1 eV. So there is a problem, a quantitative problem, if you just take a molecular picture. But I think solid state effects do play a role, and you have to take into account the fact that you have also the Coulomb repulsion between the balls which enter in the game, and you have to be able to do a full calculation of that to try to understand the situation. You can also ask yourself, why do you get only 12% and not 50%? Because usually that's what you would expect to reach. You could reach 50%. Well, one reason is first that the FCC is not bipartite, so you cannot expect to reach an ordered state with 50% with 2 minus and 50% without electron. And also you have the Coulomb repulsion, which is going to play a role in this kind of picture. So all that is, we don't have calculations about that, but I am speaking to specialists. So I think people here could do something to help us to understand the situation. Now, the question which arises, what is the physics of this phase that you get, this cubic quenched phase? So when we measured the carbon NMR, what we found is that T1 has, so here is this part is the two lines are just intermixing there. We have chemical exchange. But when you look at low temperature, the carbon NMR, for instance, shows that you have a drop which seems to reflect partly the existence of the gap due to the singlets. But still, it has a T1 which doesn't go to zero, which seems to indicate that it's metallic. In fact, the ESR measurements, I didn't answer, I should have told you that ESR is done, and ESR learns that a lot about that. The ESR measurements give us the susceptibility here and seem to show a poly contribution to the susceptibility. So it seems that this system is metallic. And if the system is metallic, you have to do some remarks. This is a one electron per ball system, but it should be in a much about half-filled state. But the fact that you have stabilized singlets induces a non-stoichiometry in the remaining sides. So you have a non-stoichiometry then, which is intrinsic due to this charge segregation. And so the metallicity might be due to the non-stoichiometry. We don't know whether it's really a homogeneous type of metallic state or whether it's the non-stoichiometry which allows the metallicity.
And what's transport?
No transport on these kind of systems. Unfortunately, this is why these systems are difficult, because these are quenched. Transport in these kind of systems is very difficult to do because you have the systems are not stable in air, so you cannot do contacting, and so it's somewhat complicated to work on that. The main cases which were studied were the polymers which are stable in air. It happens that the polymers are stable. But the alkali is immediately sucked out by oxygen, get problems.
And when you say it's half filled, it's not really half filled, right? It's one electron out of six.
I say it's one electron per site. If you take the lowest level, I agree. The half filled is really the F3, but it depends whether you have any effect which splits the bands in some sense, and I don't know. In any case,
do you view the hopping as these doubly occupied sites, one of the two electrons moving around, or the singly occupied sites?
We don't know. I would think that the conductivity is due to the singly occupied sites which move, because node can move on the C60 balls. We don't see anything telling us that the C60 neutral can be seen. So it might indicate that the remaining electrons just share between the other balls. They are moving too fast from ball to the next. So the conductivity could really come from the fact that you have 0.70 electrons moving on single level. So no problem to get metallicity there.
Just like self-doping, you can call it self-doping.
Exactly. Because of segregation, you could get.
That's another thing in some rutinet compounds.
I can understand that. But the problem is this segregation, which is very strange. Okay, so this is one case. I don't know how time goes. Second case, which seems to be interesting, is the, as I say, told you, the A4C60 systems are found insulators. But the question is that this A4C60 have a different structure than the cubic. So always when you get this kind of problem, you always ask yourself whether it's not the structure which favors a splitting of the bands, because A4, four electrons per ball, if you split the bands and get sublevels, you can get a simple band insulator without problem. So the question is it possible to look at the A2 case, which is the symmetric of the A4? In that case, one would be able to see whether one gets a similar situation. The problem is A2 phase, there is only one case which has been synthesized so far, which is Na2C60. And when we were able to find that this is a good case, of course, we did immediately the experiments on it to try to understand the situation. So let's recall the situation. If you take the A4C60 compounds, and if you do optical conductivity on them, what you find is that you have an optical gap which is large, by 0.5 electron volts, as measured by electron energy loss spectroscopy. And this is true for most cases. So you have a large optical gap, so it's a good band insulator, but remind that this is the bandwidth as well, and so it's, there is a problem that, at this level. But now, if you do NMR, you do find a much smaller spin gap of the order of 0.1 eV. When you measure by NMR, you measure magnetic excitations, so that this is essentially 1/T1 measurements. I'll show the data after. So there seem to be two different gaps in the system. I don't know whether I have data here. So the main question which was asked is whether this band structure is specific of the body center tetragonal structure of A4, because it's not the cubic face in that case. We worked on the Na2C60, and on this system, we find the same. The 1/T1 versus T, this is K4C60, this is Na2C60. As you can see, this is an activated law. The fits correspond to an activated law, which means that you have a gap which is even larger in that case than in this case. So the situation is that when you probe the spin excitations in this system, you find that they have a rather weak gap as compared to the optical gap measured to the gap measured optically, and it's the gap is larger for Na2C60 than for K4. So the simple fact that you have a gap in Na2C60 is already telling you that it is not very much dependent on the structure, because Na2C60 has a different, it is really cubic. It's cubic like C60 itself. That is, it has this most ordered cubic phase. This kind of property doesn't seem to depend very much on the structure itself. The idea to understand that was given for a long time by the Tosatis group, saying that these are not Taylor insulators, that is that rather than having a degenerate T1U band, you have, even for pure molecule, you have a distortion, as I said before, a Jahn-Teller distortion, which makes that you have a situation in which you fill the lowest level. And this this fits with the experimental situation, that is you have an insulator which has no magnetic ground state. It has really a singlet state on the balls. When you higher the temperature, you begin to accede to a differently distorted Jahn-Teller state for which the spins are parallel to each other. The usual Hund's rule would like that this is the lowest case. In classical situation, you prefer this kind of state as being the ground state, and you would expect a magnetic ground state with two electrons on the ball. But the situation is that you switch, and this is the most stable. So the Hund's rule is violated in that case. So the fact that you have two different gaps becomes easy to understand. It's a molecular excitation which brings one ball from one Jahn-Teller distortion to the next, which gives you the excitation of the speed excitation, while the optical gap measured is this one. So this kind of explanation is somewhat satisfactory because it can explain the difference of gaps, and it tells you that that the correlation play a large role because it's the correlation which forces this state as being the lowest energy.
The order of magnitude of big delta?
The big delta is of the order precisely of W, 0.5. So there is still a problem because all these are based on at the start on molecular properties, and we are in the solid state. And so you have a bandwidth which is of the order W, which is 0.5, which is the same as this. So it's very strange because you could think that that the gap shouldn't be seen at all because the levels are broadened as much as they are separated. But it's precisely you need to put the correlation to understand this behavior, which localized the electron on the ball. But the most interesting thing we found on Na2C60 is that if you measure 1 over T1T, I just plot again the data which I had before, but I plot it on a log scale here. So you see the behavior at low T. And it's very interesting to find out that at low T, 1 over T1T reaches a constant value. You have this gap type excitation, which gives you this the spin gap, but you have at low temperature something which is nearly constant, which seems to indicate that you have a residual metallic character in this system. So there is a system in which you have a large gap, which seems to be an insulator, but which has a residual metallic character there. And this is not at all the same as K4. K4C60, so the A4C60 has really this gap thing which goes down to very low temperature. So you don't have this this type of metallic behavior. But in the K4 case, what you find is that if you put some pressure on the K4 rubidium 4, in the rubidium 4 case, if you put pressure, you find that you start with this gap insulator, and you see that you drive some metallicity because 1 over Tn has a T-linear term at the beginning, which grows at the same time as this one drops. But still, what you do find is that you have a metallic character which coexists with this excitation, which seems to be associated with the singlet-triplet excitations in the system. And in the gap is singlet-triplet
Why are all these curves cross exactly one?
Well, I don't know.
Is this something common or
no, I think, well, I don't know. It has not been studied that much. It's a replot of their data, I would say. I don't know.
It usually means that there are two species that just...
You could increase the species. No, because they are... I would say you would see that in the alkali NMR, if there were two species, because the carbon is not very sensitive to distinguish the balls, because there are many carbons on a ball. They have the lines are broad, and you cannot distinguish different situations. As we showed in the cesium-160, the alkali can distinguish situations. In that case, well, I don't know. This is really what we want to show is that this behavior is exactly the one we find in the case of Na2C60 at ambient pressure. The Na2C60 at ambient pressure has a weak one T-linear term, which I think I have a plot somewhere else. I have plotted here. So if you compare all these cases and you add the Na2C60, it has a linear term. But of course, you need the log scale to see it. But still, there is a linear term here. It's not vanishing exponentially. So there is no, here it doesn't go through the same point. So if you compare the systems, at least, you find that in all cases, you seem to have a residual metallic character which exists together with molecular excitations. And so the idea could be that we are really in a case where you have a metal insulator transition, and if I address to these people like Antoine or Cotillard, we wonder whether this couldn't be a situation similar to the Condor resonance that you have near a metal insulator transition. That is, we are still maybe on the metal side or just on the verge to become insulator and have still a behavior which is reminiscent, which could come from this kind of effect. I don't know whether this is the case, but this is just a suggestion. I could go to the high temperature properties. I think time is elapsing. What I want to show is that when you go to high temperature, you have a change of behavior that you could think associated with the change from FCC to SC. I'm not going to go into detail on that, so I'll pass some of these. Maybe it's not important for you. I'll pass all that. The only thing maybe I would like to show is that K4, which is a compound which has no FCC simple cubic transition, has the same kind of behavior at high temperature. This is the activated low, but you see at high temperature something changes. There is a turnover which here seems to be associated to the transition, but in fact we showed that it's not really the transition which drives this behavior, and in the K4, it's the same. It's not the transition which drives the behavior. So we think that something is changing at high temperature. Maybe the singlet-triplet gap is changing. Maybe structural short range order distortion, which we see by other experiments, indicate that you have here some structural effect which plays a role. So this is essentially tells us that somewhere the gaps and these quantities are linked with the actual structures of the material. So if you modify the structure, you are changing these parameters somewhat, and this has to be taken into account. So I want to go, because this is very important again, I want to go to this case of the Na2AC60. Remember, these systems seem to be special as respect to these ones. So we did NMR on this, and the interest is we could compare this case and this case nicely, because these are exactly the same structure. You switch from Na2C60 to Na2AC60 without changing the structural properties. You still keep this FCC simple cubic phase transition for these two systems. So you can compare an A2 and an A3 system quite nicely. And look, this is very simple. These are the observation you have in Na2 cesium-60 and Na2C60. This one is a metal superconductor below 10K. This one is a weak metal. We don't know whether it's superconducts at all. We are planning to do measurements to check that. And you see that in both cases you have a linear term. This one is large, this one is small. As I told you, this one, the linear term of 1 over T1 is small here. And in both cases, you find this large increase here. You could even put the data one on each other, really, nearly. And so there is really a very strong similarity between the metallic superconducting case and the weakly metallic near metal insulator case, which means that this kind of singlet triplet excitation seems to be present both in this case and in this case. And this is strange because here you have 2 electrons per bone and you are expecting singlets without problem, so singlet triplets without problem. Here you are in an A3 case, which you have 3 electrons per bone in principle. So the analogy is so strong that it tells you at least that you have molecular excitations in this system which are there and which you can sense. Here the molecular excitations are thermally populated, but apparently here they are also observed by the experiment. We can even compare Na2-cesium-C60 with other A3-C60. This we plot 1 over T1T. This is Na2-cesium-C60, and this is for rubidium-free-C60. Yeah. So you see, in that case, this was a little bit overlooked in the past. You also have the temperature dependence of the 1 over T1T, which seems to be rather analogous to this one. But the low temperature term is larger because the density of state is larger in the metallic state than here. So this might be the reason why TC is smaller in that case. You have a lower density of state than here. So yeah. No, it doesn't exist. It goes, then you, if you put too much sodium, they go as 4 in a tetrahedral site. We cannot play with that as much as we would like. So you have an indication that you always have coexistence of metallic character and molecular excitation on dynamic scales in all these systems. So one possibility which we advocate is that for some reasons, this is, you see, jumping from Na2 cesium-1 to A3, knowing that what we have seen in cesium-1, that is the singlets which are stabilized, which are static, we are led to think that maybe when you have A3-C60, you have, in fact, on some balls you have 2 electrons, on some other 4 electrons. To have transport, you need somewhere to have a situation where you have 2 electrons on some balls and 4 electrons on the other. But let's assume that when you have 2 and 4 electrons, the lifetime of these states is large enough that you could even sense the singlet triplet excitation associated with that. So it's quite possible that the singlet triplet excitation arise because you still have in your material states with 2 electrons or 4 electrons, which are long enough to sense the molecular excitations associated with that. So I don't want to go to the high T. Okay, I leap all that. So to conclude, I think I have convinced you that fluoride compounds are peculiar correlated electron systems. I have shown that the Jahn-Teller effects really are important. Even if they are not seen statically, they could play a role on the dynamic scale. In the case of cesium-1, C60, we have evidenced charge segregation associated with Jahn-Teller distortion. We still need serious calculations to explain the balance between electron correlations and the Jahn-Teller distortions, and I think that an audience like this could be able to help us to go forward. The comparison of Na2-C60 and A4-C60 shows that both are near metal insulator transition, that the fact that you have different structure doesn't change basically the ground state, which seems to be a Mott Jahn-Teller insulator. This Jahn-Teller effect might explain why electronic configurations appear to be small in the A3 and large in the A4. This is a essential point. And the comparison between the Na2-cesium and A3 is telling us that the molecular excitations are really fingerprints of the fluoride compounds, and that strong electronic correlations are really needed to explain why they survive in the solid. And we suggest, but this is only a suggestion, that dynamic charge segregation plays still a role as well. Of course, all the thing I didn't show is that still the structure and doping has induces larger sensitivity of these systems and modifies the properties. So we really have to do solid state type of calculation and not to be completely fixed on molecular type of arguments. Okay, thank you very much.
More questions?
Mm-hmm. I would like to ask this. When you said this, there is a charge segregation. Is this, you're just thinking that these singlets, they form a superstructure, like super lattice, and then excitation on top of that are very homogeneous, or you think that actually there are some real inhomogeneities?
I think it should be inhomogeneous. I don't know.
But is there a way to tell when you say dynamic charge segregation? What kind of dynamics do you expect?
Well, I would say that when one electron jumps from the A3 and goes to on the next ball, the lifetime of the A4 is more than what you would expect from the overlaps. So the correlations are just yielding a situation where the lifetime is going to be longer. All this is high temperature measurement. It's not zero temperature state, and so it's.
Just wondering, do you think there are many any metastable states for this segregation, or is it just like one homogeneous state, and then at the top you have excitations on different time scales? This is what I want to know.
Right. I don't see that as being homogeneous, but maybe I think the disorder might play a role. The fact that you have a disorder of the balls might play a role and might go against any idea of an extended state in some sense. So you have in this system, you have both the molecular properties, the disorder of the solid, which is always hidden, because nobody wants to do calculation on this kind of disorder, it complicates life, but which could play a role, and the correlations, and the antenna. So you see all that is an intermixing, but you see the analogy. You can find analogy with the cuprates. You can find analogies with the manganites. You have many things in which these systems are extremely rich because basically we have found all solid state physics. There are ferromagnets, superconductor, antiferromagnets, metal insulator transitions, charge segregation. You have all.
Is the freezing temperature for the ball rotation, is that known for each of these? Is it different in each of these compounds? Is there a way to correlate that in any way with other behaviors you've seen?
I am not sure whether it's known. We have done some studies at the beginning on the K3. NMR allows us to see this the freezing of the rotations, but we see partial freezing. It's complicated because at very high temperature, you really can think of the balls are really turning without any specific orientation. We have shown that when you cool, you begin to freeze an axis of rotation, and you have slow motions, you have fast motions around this axis, and slow motion of the axis which jumps between specific orientations. And then at lower temperature, we lose the tool. We don't have, and the X-rays, there are very few experiments which can tell you when do you freeze totally. I think they are completely frozen when you reach superconductivity in this range of temperature. So you could think that you have a disordered orientational state at low T. And this was considered, can be considered as a possibility to explain differences between between cases.
Does that play any role, very important role, whether they're really frozen randomly or not randomly? It doesn't seem to, you didn't get the feeling that this was like a very crucial
the rest. The problem is you cannot freeze them non-randomly. The only case which is slightly less random than others is the Na2 cesium, and this one is less superconductor than the other ones. So this wouldn't go the right way in some sense, because the disorder should reduce the bandwidth, increase the bandwidth, decrease density of state, get lower TC. So you have many effects which are intermixed. You cannot do in each system everything you want. This is why it was very, very interesting to find Schön's experiment, because he could dope a single layer, you know. This was fantastic. You could do all these states in one. But this was a dream, I think.
Questions?